He's got a mic, and he's in a mood. Buckle up, Buttercup. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
I'm in a mood.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's The Ron Van Dam
Show. Thank you so much.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird if you like that sort of thing.
I'm in a mood. I have a mood ring on. I'm in a mood. I don't know what my mood is, but I'm in it. Remember mood rings? Are you old enough to remember what a mood ring is? Millennials don't understand what that is. They think a mood ring tells you when you're going through menopause or you're having your period. That's not what a mood ring is. Apparently it was a ring, and I was alive during this period of time. It was a ring, you put it on your finger and it would change colors depending on your mood. My mood was purple. I have no idea what that meant. But that's what it was. Hey, don't piss me off. I could turn a turquoise blue. Don't make me turn a turquoise blue on you. I would be in a mood. But Ron, did I upset you? No, why do you say that? Your mood ring is like a kind of an aqua teal. Oh, I guess I am in a mood. Don't piss me off. My ring's gonna turn pink. You don't want that. You know what? I'm in the mood for sex. I know, your ring is orange. And ladies and gentlemen, that ends the mood ring bit. Thank you so much. Ron did his mood ring bit today. Ooh, I got to catch it. All right, welcome to the show. How are you? It's Monday, as I understand it, according to my calendar. I have a calendar. It actually hangs on the wall in my kitchen. I know. I'm archaic. I get it. No, I don't have a wall phone. I'm not that archaic. Apparently, it's Monday. This is also Martin Luther King Day, by the way. We observe it. The schools are closed. We don't open schools at all, actually. Banks are probably closed. Some are, some aren't. Post office, I believe, is closed. I believe CVS is open. That's all I know. It is Martin Luther King Day. We observe it today, as we should every day. No relation to Larry King, by the way, for those that are incredibly stupid. I will need to point that out because, you know, we are, by law and by chapter 27, verse 17 in the Bible, we are an educational program. Did you know that? Oh, yeah.
The following programming is EI, educational and informative.
I am EI, by the way. I'm EI. Actually, I'm not. Welcome to the show. Thank you for coming. I know this was a lot of effort for you to either turn on your radio or click on something. No matter what action you took that was so minor, it's ridiculous, here you are. I realize that you could leave me at any moment, so I must keep you entertained. That's why I do outlandish things, why I am in a mood, because, there's no reason, actually. I do have an incredible guest coming up a little bit later in the program who has done some stuff that you'll never do. And you'll have to find out what that is, as I will at that moment. You know, I watch a lot of TV. I talk about that a lot on this particular program. I am a child of the television. I spent my entire childhood watching TV while other kids were out in the streets playing stickball and baseball and riding their bicycles and creating havoc and blowing up buildings. I was inside my house in my living room watching television, and my parents kept saying to me, "Ron, go out and play with the other children." And my response was always, "But I can't stand children." And to this day, no, I that's not true. I can stand them for a period of time. I didn't like children when I didn't. I wanted to be around adults. It's like dogs. A lot of dogs don't want to be around other dogs. They want to be around humans more so. That was what I wanted to be around adults when I was a child. I didn't want to be around other children because other children were acting like children. I wanted to act like an adult. And I did. But I would watch TV because I didn't want to play with the other kids. I would call them the morons. I would sit in my living room and I'd watch TV and all day. I didn't even go to school. I just watched TV. So I like watching. I mean, there's a show that's on right now that is starting to really bother me. The show is called Jeopardy. There's two kinds of people on the planet. There's people that watch Jeopardy and people that don't. There are a lot of people that don't, and there are a lot of people that do. I watch it for no reason whatsoever. I watch it to realize that there are incredibly smart people on Jeopardy who know the answer to almost everything, and then there's people who don't know the answer to most of it are incredibly stupid. It is. There are some people like my spouse who she knows the answer to every question. I keep telling her, "Why don't you go on Jeopardy? You're like these people. Why don't you do that?" She says, "Because I can't buzz in fast enough." Okay, whatever. They have a rule on. Have you watched Jeopardy? If you haven't watched Jeopardy, then there's really no point for you to be here. On the show, apparently they have no limits as to how often you can win and how much money you can win as well. They have a contestant on right now as we speak. Her name is Amy Schneider. And she, interesting background, she transformed from male to female. Transgender, is that what we, I don't know the terminology because there's so many terms to use. Believe that's what she is, but incredibly smart. She knows like every the. My God, it's incredible. I don't know if she's smart or she's able to retain information. I think that's the definition of smart. I'm not sure. If you surround yourself with a lot of information and you somehow have the ability never to lose that information in your head, then I guess you can be a Jeopardy champion. And that's the problem. She's won something like 30 games in a row on 30 things, you know, 30 Jeopardies. And she's won over $1 million. She's like at $1.25 million. And here's the problem with that. The show is boring. They have two other contestants on Jeopardy. They're good, but they're not even close to how good she is. So she always wins, and it's never a contest. There's never any competition. It's not like, ooh, who's going to win? Ooh, it's getting close. Watching competition isn't fun if there's no competition. And there isn't and hasn't been for well over a month and a half. Jeopardy has become incredibly boring. If any of the producers of Jeopardy are listening to this program, and you know and I know, they're not. But let's say they are. Here's my advice to you. Put a limit on this stuff. Make it a rule you can't win more than 30 times in a row. Otherwise, it gets boring. And make it also a rule that you can't win more than $1 million. When somebody has won $1 million on a game show, close the suitcase, pack it up, go home, and be happy. Let someone else have a chance. I'm getting sick and tired. I'm starting to resent this woman, Amy Schneider, on the show. because she's making too much money. I naturally, by the way, resent people that have a lot of things that I don't. I just resent them. It's just, it's human, and I'm a human, so okay. I watch these real estate shows where these people are buying these luxurious houses. You know, they're like over $1 million houses and all that kind of, with big swimming pools, infinity pools, pools that go on forever. Not Xfinity pools, that's different. Infinity pools. There is such a word as infinity. There's no such word as Xfinity. Anyway, I watch these shows, and I'm just watching shows, watching what people don't have. Remember, there was a show called Good Times. Do you remember that, millennials? I know. I'm sorry. You don't. They lived in a slum building. They lived in a, and you know, it was awful in the Bronx somewhere. And I liked that show because these were real people with real problems, really struggling. I don't watch shows where people are rich. It just kind of like puts me off. My mood ring like starts going into strobe colors. Because it doesn't make me feel good about myself. Hey, let's do this. Let's watch a show about people who have more than I do and rub it in my face. Okay, that sounds like fun. Why do people even watch the Kardashians? They have much more than you do. What is your fascination with these dipshits? I'm sorry, I talk about the Kardashians a lot, I've noticed. Am I obsessed with them? God, no. I can't even look at them. I've never seen so much makeup used on one face in my life. Is it a Kardashian, or am I watching Bozo walk around? Yeah, I have a mic, and I'm in a mood. Yeah. All right. When we come back, we're going to speak to my guest. Well, I'm going to speak to my guest. You're just going to listen to it, and that's how we're going to do that. Okay. Does that sound like a decent idea? No? Oh, okay.
Looking for a fun night out? Check out that bar near your house, now featuring live entertainment all weekend. Friday night, it's one guy and a guitar playing 90s cover tunes and original songs about his recent breakup. Catch a dose of classic rock on Saturday nights with that band fronted by that chick you knew in high school who's still pretty hot after a couple drinks. Sunday afternoons, it's three old guys and a hipster doing their very best to play jazz. And don't miss the big hot Sunday dance party with your DJ, the bartender's second wife's stepson with those weird things in his ears. It's all happening this weekend at that bar near your house. Not too far to drive, just a little too far to walk. We'll see you there.
I love that commercial because that is actually true. There is a bar down the street from where I live. Remember bars? Remember where you used to go to a place and there would be other people there and you could be within 6 feet of them? You probably don't remember that. Anyway, there is a horrible, horrendously bad singer, and her boyfriend, I guess, plays the guitar, and they're set up in the corner of the room in this restaurant. And at night, you know, the bar does rather well, and these two pathetic schmucks sing songs that they know, but nobody else does. And if it's a familiar song, then the crowd goes, I don't even understand what you're singing. But the funny part is, which is so true, after a few drinks, hey, they're not so bad. It's funny. Anyway, it's so true, man. I never thought that my show would be that poignant, to be honest with you. Anyway, all right, my guest is going to join us now. Let's say hello. Author Michael Cotton joins us now. Michael Cotton is a prize-winning journalist and has turned his efforts toward a very interesting individual. This is an individual named David Harris, and most people are probably not familiar with the name. Who is David Harris?
Good good morning, Ron. Thank you for having me on the program. David Harris is a, in my mind, an American hero. David was the first black pilot to be hired by a commercial airline in 1964, American Airlines. And at that point, you can say that David broke the racial barrier in commercial aviation.
The early and mid 60s were a very turbulent time, as I recall. Actually, I'm old enough to remember this. The achievement here is probably a little more interesting than most people realize.
I agree. It was 1964, the height, as you know, of the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. Lyndon Johnson was signing the Civil Rights Act. Later, you know, a few years later, obviously, there was civil unrest. David had a choice to make, and he wanted to be a pilot. He knew that he was a good aviator. He had served proudly and with distinction in the military. But during that time, Ron, airlines were not hiring black pilots.
Right.
And so he had a choice, and he made that choice. He wanted to be a pilot. So David, one interesting point I just need to tell you, David's light-skinned, green eyes. People weren't sure when David went for interviews if he was black. And I thought he did something very courageous. He told the American Airlines recruiter that he was a black man and that he wanted the job. And he said, the recruiter said, I don't care if you're white, black, or chartreuse, can you fly an airplane?
Oh, that's cool.
He said, well, yes, I can. Yeah, wow. It was cool. And he got hired. But I thought that was a courageous thing to do.
Wow. Would it be safe to say that even though during those weird, turbulent times, that because he was light-skinned, this may have been to his advantage at that point?
It might have been. It very well may have played a role. Mm-hmm. But I will say this, he was turned down by a number of other airlines.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe some people realized that he was black when he's but he didn't try to hide it. Right. I guess that's the point I'm trying to make. He did not try to hide it. So, but his story is uplifting, and it's an inspirational story. It's a story I think that will resonate hopefully with young readers across the country, because it shows how people deal with adversity and move forward and become successful despite the racial obstacles that David encountered.
No question about it. And he's obviously opened up doors that were not opened before, as people do in many industries. But again, at that time period, for anybody to break that barrier was an incredible feat.
It was. And during the time that Ron, that he was at working with American Airlines, and I do want to say that he rose to the level of captain in a few short years. And he had a distinguished career with American Airlines for 30 years.
Wow.
He was hired in 1964, and then he retired in 1994. And one of the points I do want to make is how humble David is. Mm-hmm. And he talks about standing on the shoulders of the Tuskegee Airmen, you know, who were the fighter pilots in World War II back in the 40s. They were not afforded an opportunity, Ron, to be hired as commercial pilots when they left the military. So David's point to me once, and he said this repeatedly, that the Tuskegee Airmen, some of the Tuskegee Airmen should have been the first commercial airline pilots, but because of racial discrimination, they were not afforded that opportunity. But David came along, as he says, with the right skills, at the right time, at the right place.
It's interesting because we use the phrase earning your wings for just about anything, not just pilots, and he literally did earn his wings in that sense and made that phrase come alive. He must have been damn good. I mean, what in his personality do you think led him to this type of success in breaking that barrier? Was something special about him in that sense?
I think so. That's a good question, Ron. Tenacity, perseverance. David's a perfectionist. Mm-hmm. He is an excellent, excellent pilot. And he's an excellent aviator. Always wanted to fly, as a matter of fact. But he studied hard. He was was trained on B-52 bombers in the military. And so David has flown just a variety of aircraft. You know, he knows airplanes in and out.
Yeah.
Owns one. Tenacity, persistence, and here's the other point. You know, David wanted just to have a wonderful career for himself. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't go into this trying to break a racial barrier. He just wanted to provide for his family, put food on the table for his wife and kids, mm-hmm. buy a nice house, and have a nice life for his family. That was the goal.
Interesting.
Which is the goal for most Americans, and that's why I mentioned yeah. earlier, I think David is an American hero.
In that sense, he absolutely is. It is an amazing story, and interestingly enough, this book is through the National Geographic auspices, which is so there is National Geographic tends to go in the direction of teaching youngsters life lessons. Used to be just some incredible pictures. Now it's far more than that, obviously. This is a life lesson that is should be in every classroom, so to speak.
I agree wholeheartedly, and I thank my publisher, National Geographic, for publishing this book. They embraced it early on mm-hmm. with thoughtful enthusiasm, and I'm so grateful. And these lessons, yes, you know, study. David talks about that, and he talks to young people. I should mention that. He talks to kids, not so much now because of COVID, unfortunately.
Right.
But prior to that, he visited schools and would talk to kids. And it was kind of cute, Ron, because he would make paper airplanes and then teach kids about the physics of flight.
Yeah.
And he would show pictures of himself in the cockpit and the airplanes. But study. He would talk about that and work hard, have integrity, don't give up on your dreams. Follow your heart, go for your goals. And I know those sounds cliche, but it really isn't, because that's what David did.
Yeah.
So when kids all around the country look at David, you know, they can say, hey, you know, I might want to be a pilot one day, or I want to fly. And look at David as a role model and say, I can do that too, because David's path was not easy. And David could have, he could have quit at any moment, and maybe people wouldn't have blamed him. You know, but he didn't. He stuck with it, and he said, "You know, I'm going to be a pilot. I'm going to be a captain." And again, despite some of the racial barriers that he encountered, he did it and did it proudly and served well with American Airlines, and just had a great career.
Yeah. How did you get involved in his story?
I am good friends with David's ex-wife and his family.
Ah.
And have been for years. And I didn't even know there was a David until I went to visit Lynn and her family
mm-hmm.
One holiday. And she sat on the couch and just talked. And she just told me, she says, you know, I don't know if I've ever told you about my ex-husband. You know, he's the first black commercial airline pilot, you know, in America. What? You kidding me? She says, no, he's a very interesting guy. And it might be a good magazine story for you. For someone. And I said, well, that's great. Mm-hmm. So Lynn says, here's David's number. Why don't you just give him a call?
Oh, wow.
You know, no pressure. Just chat him up a little bit. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But mm-hmm. I'm proud to make the connection.
Mm-hmm.
Like you, like David, you know, they're still good friends. So I called David and Ron. I figure we'll talk for, you know, 5-10 minutes and, mm-hmm. you know, maybe I'll take some notes and we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
We talked for more than 2 hours. Wow. Wow. I knew right then that this was a lot bigger than a magazine story. So I got back, I called Lynn and thanked her. And we put our heads together. I called my agent and I called my editor at National Geographic, and
mm-hmm.
The rest is history.
Wow. That's how things happen. Just all of a sudden.
It does. You're right.
Yeah.
Didn't plan it. It just sort of happened.
Wow. Well, and the fact that this is being exposed to the youth and to everybody is it's important. We learn so many lessons in life, but we don't know why we learn them sometimes. And until it's uncovered like this, you don't really see what's going on underneath. And it's good. I'm very impressed with the human resources guy at American Airlines who said, "Yeah, I don't care what color you are. You got qualifications. Let's do this." That guy's a hero too.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I agree.
Yeah.
Because he was turned down by almost every other airline. As a matter of fact, he said that I believe American Airlines was the last stop
mm-hmm.
for him. So that was a defining moment.
Right.
In his career, there's no question about it.
Oddly enough, American.
He was also,
yeah, go on.
I was going to say he's also proud in the book. He talks about organizing the first all-black flight crew with American Airlines, which was in, I believe, 1984.
Wow.
And how proudly they walked down that jetway in Dallas for the first time.
Wow.
And walked into the cockpit. And he talked about the looks and the stares and how heads were spinning as they walked down the jetway into that cockpit, because it was the first time that three black pilots were ever in the cockpit at the same time with American Airlines.
Yeah.
And that must have been a sight to behold, and that was a momentous occasion for them and for American Airlines.
American Airlines, one of the few airlines that are still in existence from the 60s.
You're right, that's true. You're absolutely right.
Oddly enough. The book, tell me about it. It's available everywhere, I assume?
Available everywhere. Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's online, absolutely. It's on sale right now. Hoping people will rush out to buy. We're really excited about it, and I think it will resonate with young people around the country. And again, it's uplifting, it's inspirational, it's motivating, and a story that few people know about. And as a journalist, over my career, you know, we rarely get an opportunity, Ron, to tell new stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just so excited to tell this this story about David Harris.
Okay. The book is called Segregated Skies, How the First African American Commercial Pilot Earned His Wings. It's fascinating. And, you know, pick it up and leave it lying around so your kids can pick it up and read it. And it's a good thing. We look forward to your next writing. Of course, Michael Cotman, you can Google him and find him everywhere as well, probably Cottman. And thank you so much for spending your time with us today. That's pretty cool. Okay, we're just about out of time. When it comes to this point in the show, I get a little bit sad because of we've had such a good time together, and then we have to go away and wait until the next day to do another show. It's kind of sad. Just as I start feeling a connection with my audience, I run out of time. Isn't that what life is itself? Just as you start enjoying yourself, you have to go. And it's the opposite when, you know, just as you're starting to get really sick of something, it never seems to end. It's like school. Oh, I remember going to school. Millennials, do you remember when there was school? When people could actually be in the same classroom? You don't remember. That's before the pandemic. You don't remember that. Yeah, I used to, the teacher used to just stand in front of the classroom and blah, 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 blah. I have no idea what they were saying. It was just a blah, blah, blah. It was like Lady Gaga. Just gaga, 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 gaga. And all I did was just sit in my little stupid desk. I could hardly fit in a desk because I was tall even when I was a kid. My knees would like hit the bottom of the, it was just awful. But toward the front of the room, there was a big clock, a good old clock with a second hand on it. That clock became my friend. I would stare at that clock all day, watch every second of the school day just tick by, second by second by second, waiting for that clock to hit 10 minutes after 3 in the afternoon. That's when school ended. 10 minutes after 3. And when that minute hand hit that 2, and that little hand was on that 3, I knew freedom was but a moment away. And then a bell would go off, and everybody would leave. Oh, freedom. Where was I? Okay, boy, just drifted off there. Wow, I apologize for nothing. Apologize for nothing. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. I don't know how I do it either. I know that's what you just said. I know that's what you just said to yourself. My God, Ron's going to be back tomorrow with a brand new show. How does he do it? I know you said that to yourself. I'll never let you know how I do it, because once that secret is revealed, then the magic is gone. Well, anyway, until tomorrow, have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace.